And we are live and alive and kicking.
Javi stole my intro. I'm always the one who starts. Javi came in and ripped the rug out right from
What's
under
up,
me.
My American action figure, Mr. Elliot Lane, the producer of Morning News, the host of our top performing podcast, Cannabis Daily. Mr. Lane, how are you today?
Oh, man. I don't know where this Javi came from, but he can stay. He can stay. Javi Haas, I'm good, my Argentinian brethren. You doing good down there, man? You holding down the fort for us down there?
I am doing great, doing great. Looking forward to the Benzinga Cannabis Awards. They're coming back in September. I'm so excited.
It's More exciting.
After this intro.
Y'all, yes, after this intro. We are here. We are not drinking beer because this is a cannabis show. Javi, my man, tell us about the Benzinga Cannabis Awards.
I mean, you can find all the info on benzinga.com/cannabis. It is pretty self-explanatory. It's the Benzinga Cannabis Awards. Basically, what we are doing is recognizing the most innovative companies and people in the space, the top advocates, the top journalists, you know, the top analysts, everything that pertains to the world of cannabis, business, finance, and activism, we're awarding, right? We did an additional last year. The selected companies were amazing, right? But there's always room for new players, for new contenders, for
runner-up. Well, that's why we do this every year. Right? We don't just award the same people every year. Why do it every year? Just have one show and say these people are it for life. But that's not how any industry works. That's not how capitalism works. It's certainly not how an award show works. But all that said, we had some really amazing winners. I mean, people that ranged from Polaris Equity Group to Marijuana Moment to Business Insider to the Foley Hoag, I think, on the law firm side. I mean, there were so many major players in the in this industry that we were able to recognize. But the cool thing about award shows is year in and year out, you have new players that are coming in and being creative. They're innovating. They're taking these segments and doing things that haven't been done before. And that's what this award show is about. It's not just about recognizing those people that are moving this industry forward, but it's about staying up to date. It's about recognizing this is where this industry is going. This is where I need to take my business and start to adjust things in that direction. It's a business show at the end of the day. And I'm excited about that.
And, you know, people should know two more things. One is it's not us picking arbitrarily. We have a very complex and complete rating
system. All my friends. It's all my friends. I only pick my friends.
We have a very complex and complete rating system where we have like industry experts who have no conflicts of interest voting for different companies in each one of the categories. We have a bunch of judges, right? There's 20 something categories and no judge is judging more than two or three categories, right? To make sure that they're looking at each nominee in detail. And what's more interesting even is that you can also nominate your companies in Espanol and in Francais. Alors, si tu es un Francais canadien, o si estás en América Latina o España, you can nominate your companies.
Javi, you just have to make me look bad, don't you? It's fine. It's fine. No. I'll forgive you later. I will say, we're going to get into some news here shortly just to get a quick rapid fire of what's happening in the industry. But we have a highly awarded guest today. Mr. David Feldman is going to join us from Skip Intro Advisors. I think he just won another award like 2 weeks ago. So I'm super excited to chat with him and what in the H is happening in New York, in the Northeast, and in M&A in general. I mean, the man is just a fountain of knowledge. But that being said, Javi, I think we're about done with earnings, man. I think we had Acreage come out, end of day yesterday? You know, obviously that affects Canopy and CDC. We saw those stocks move. Canopy, insightful day. But what are you watching, man? Like, what's piquing your interest right now that earnings are winding down?
Yep. Today, I think the top news story relates to our good friend Chad Bronstein and Karma Holdco. They did an interview with Hulk Hogan, the one and only wrestler. And it seems like Hulk Hogan himself is launching a cannabis THC and CBD brand, as well as a functional mushrooms brand, under the same umbrella of brands as Mike Tyson and Ric Flair. So stay tuned for more details on that. We'll have an interview with Hulk himself.
And Holyfield.
Very soon.
Right? They're getting some OG
future also.
Warriors. Yeah. Well, I guess future as well. But I was going to say,
just insane.
Fighters, man. There's a specific athlete type that they're going for. That's indeed. Cool.
Indeed. We looked into some trends out of Semrush, S-E-M-R, on the stock market. Semrush shared some data with us, and America's burning questions about legality are all about cannabis. Is weed legal in Florida? Emerge is the number one query in the study in relation to Google searches for legal matters. And all of the top five queries focused on the legal status of weed in different states, Florida, New York, Texas in particular. Further down the list, is prostitution legal in Nevada? And where is abortion legal? So imagine questions as big as these taking the backseat to the question of whether cannabis is legal in your state. That shows the massive interest there is.
I will say, it's not surprising to people like us. I am curious, if you all are listening to this, whether live or later on when the majority of our audience listens, just let us know. Is that surprising to you? Because to me, I see studies through our news desk, I would say once a month at minimum, just offering the stats from these different studies on the U.S. wants legal weed. The only reason it's not done yet is the legislative process. You're muted.
I was on Google. That's why I'm checking Google right now, and I can't go is legal, because we are missing the middle word. But this is the auto suggestions for Google. Is it legal? Is it legal to marry your cousin? Is it legal to drive barefoot? Is it legal to sleep in your car? Is it legal to own a capybara?
What are you people doing? What are you people doing with your lives? This is not how we were meant to live.
Is it legal to eat owls?
I'm done with all of you.
Honestly, I am very glad that the top queries around legality are around cannabis. It makes me feel much better that people want to smoke weed and not eat owls.
Well, they smoke weed to keep from doing the rest of the list. All right? All they're going to do is nothing.
I mean, when you get the munchies, you're not so picky with your...
Man, I really wish I had an owl. God, what are you doing with the capybara? All right, Javi, give us a few quick news items, man. We got to get to our interview. I'm super excited for this one.
There's a federal agency called the National Institute on Drug Abuse, or NIDA, and the National Institute of Health. They came together and gave an $11.6 million grant to research how marijuana affects the brains of HIV patients. Very interesting. A study to follow on benzinga.com/cannabis. Organigram, OGI, is entering the German market via a partnership with the Sanity Group. One of, if not
great
the largest.
Partnership.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's huge.
Love it.
Hey, back to your last one. I want a 30-second opinion from you. I was on a call earlier today with a California operator, and this person was telling me that medical cannabis in California was all but forgotten about. Right. If they had continued to push for medical cannabis as a therapeutic, for patients in the industry, California could have more tax revenue coming in. They could have more, effective businesses in the space focused on that, offering maybe for a healthier industry. Do you have any opinions on that?
Yeah, I do. Actually, so what happens in every state so far, what we've seen is that as adult use programs roll out, they cannibalize medical sales, right? There's no longer they're no longer separate. They're no longer unfolded. Like people go to a dispensary, they don't really disclose if it's medical use or adult use. However, some places have tax provisions that benefit medical patients. So that is where I think, if you ask me what's my opinion, I think medical and adult use programs should stay separate in every state. And we should have medical dispensaries or medical sites to a dispensary where if you present your medical card or whatever it is that is valid in each state, you should get certain tax exemptions. You should get different rates, right? It's not, I don't feel, and this is very personal, but I don't think medicine should be the same as fun, right? In terms of what it costs, right? I think we should be somewhat helping people access medical cannabis. If we agree, and we do agree that cannabis has medical potential and can be used for medical purposes, then why are we charging people these insane taxes to access medicine, right? Aren't we as a country addressing price gouging in drugs, right? Isn't this kind of the same issue? That is my question.
Damn. I feel like, Javi, you could go on for a while, my friend. But with that being said, maybe we'll have some insights from our next guest here. But there's a lot to talk about with him and pick his brain on. Let's bring on over David Fellman, Skip Intro Advisors. Dave, how are you? Welcome in.
Happy to join the comedy stylings of Javi and Elliot.
Javi's throwing me for a loop today. I'm not going to lie, Dave. But that being said, man, we got to dive right in because you have expertise that I really want to pick your brain on and not focus on the tell us about your business questions. What is happening in New York? Can you give us a quick breakdown of just your umbrella view of the New York cannabis market?
New York cannabis market is going to be awesome in 10 years. Until then, it's going to be challenging. There have been a lot of missteps. There have been a lot of challenges. I think the people running the Office of Cannabis Management here are well-intentioned, hardworking people who are trying to do something a little bit unique with a very heavy focus on social equity as kind of the centerpiece of the program, which has been both criticized and lauded, not because of social equity, but some aspects of the way they've tried to implement it. There have been some lawsuits and other problems. And so we are wading our way through. We're seeing a plethora of unlicensed dispensaries opening up left and right. They're trying to start the process of shutting those down without looking like we're bringing back the war on drugs. So it's more shutting them down, taking their stuff, not putting people in jail. But that's only just getting started with the new budget. I think long term, this is going to be the number one biggest revenue market of any state. And it's going to be critical to a future international market with import and export. So we're excited long term. But for now, it's going to be a little bit of a, you know, maiden voyage for a challenging new state agency to try to make things happen more quickly than I think their regulatory system would really prefer them to do.
You know, about this illicit retailers, we were chatting with Bruce Linton the other day, and he mentioned it was something very natural that happens in every state. How do you feel about these illicit retailers in this transition period? Is it okay that they exist or not? And what do you think will happen with them once they get eradicated and the program is fully rolled out? Do you think they will get integrated into the legal market, or as Bruce argued, for instance, they will just move on to the next state where there's a gray legal situation?
No.
Is okay. He freezing for me?
There, very yeah. Clear.
We should be back. You go.
Dave, I think you're back now.
Can you hear me?
Yep, go for it.
Can you hear me okay? All right, sorry about that. It's that time of day. My fiance is a tech exec, and she says, school's let out, internet slows down. That's what happens. So it is not okay that these unlicensed dispensaries are there. I think even the legacy players treat them differently than traditional legacy players who've been growing and doing things for years. These are things that have just popped up in the last 6, 9, 12 months, in part because Mayor Adams initially made a comment that seemed to suggest he'd be kind of hands off on these guys for a while, which was not smart, frankly. But they will they just move to another state? I don't think so. I think these are individual entrepreneurs who just said, hey, I've got a store. I'm just going to start selling other stuff. There are a few that have opened up and it says dispensary and it has a big leaf on the front. It says THC and they're just that brazen. And there is a great campaign that the state is undertaking to put billboards everywhere that says buy legal weed. And it's got to have a special label on the front of the store and all that. But, you know, it's been a constant challenge everywhere. It's one of the reasons California's challenged still to this day, because the legacy market is remaining strong. And so the trick is to make it undesirable to be a legacy player. And part of it is by, you know, California tried. They said, you know, if you come out of the shadows and seek a license, we're not going to ask you what you did before. But if you don't seek a license, we're coming after you.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't. And that was the problem. And I think in New York, we're going to continue to have that problem, which is why taxes have to be managed. And the hope is that there'll be enough people who will be convinced that there are unknowns and dangers in buying product that is not properly tested and so on. And that may be enough to protect the legal market in New York.
So a while ago, we had the wonderful Christine De La Rosa on our show here. And she said something that has stuck with me ever since. And this was months ago. But social equity, the term itself, has been hijacked. And in so doing, you have initiatives that are labeled with social equity, but aren't creating more access. So, you know, kind of my last little bit of understanding around the New York market is a lot of how they've structured it has meant to be friendly to those, I would say, small businesses, those, you know, looking that to create access, you know, and help them compete in the market before the MSOs dive in. And we did just see that timeline increase, I think, to what, end of next year? Is that right?
And end of 23, they're going to open their
first. Oh, end of 23, end of this year.
They just accelerated it.
Yeah. So is this program going to be seen as a hijacking, or is this program and how they're launching it going to be seen as at least a step forward in progress?
Well, part of the challenge is, and we saw this, for example, in New Jersey, where multiple people sort of propped up social equity players, and they were really the ones in charge. And there were wives of partners of firms that were just stuck in there with no experience in the industry and so on. That's a problem because it clearly gets around the purpose of this. And how far do you want to go? For example, much broader definition. We have disadvantaged farmers, disabled veterans, and of course, minorities and women. And that doesn't mean those aren't laudable, good people to want to try to help, but it is broadening the definition. And then New York went and made it more challenging because they said, okay, the first couple of hundred dispensaries we're only going to give to people with a prior New York State marijuana conviction, not social equity broadly, which they could have done. And some people said, well, are disabled veterans less deserving than people with a prior marijuana conviction in New York? I don't know the answer to that, but a lot of questions were raised. And now there's a lawsuit, as you may know, by a group of the current medical licensees who are all MSOs, who have said, you know, the law itself says that the first round of applications for dispensaries are supposed to be open to everybody. And they didn't actually follow that. And even though you can argue about how it looks to bring a lawsuit like that, where you're sort of challenging social equity, even where they're right, or they may be right, that's a decision for them to make. But we're having, you know, we've got a little bit of a mess here in New York. And I know that they're preparing for probably more litigation to come at the OCM. So, you know, in typical New York fashion, you know, eventually some people are going to just go to jail because they'll be found to have done something corrupt. I don't know who those people are yet. But in the meantime, we're all just trying to support the industry. We're hoping to get the first real broader license opportunities probably in the fall. And then things will start looking better and feeling better. And, you know, we already love the fact that we can smoke anywhere in New York State where cigarette smoke is allowed. We have a lot of industry events now where we're all just, you know, enjoying the product openly, which is wonderful. And so it is a new day and it's exciting, and we'll get there.
I love what you said about, like, it doesn't matter if they're right or not, right? Optics are very important, especially in the sin receiver everywhere, right? The MSO lawsuit, they may be right in a sense, but it makes me think of when Elon Musk wanted to suddenly withdraw the internet connection he was providing to Ukraine, right? And he was right. He was saying, okay, if we're paying military contractors for guns and tanks and blah, 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 why isn't the US government also paying me for my Starlink service? But the thing is, how he said it and how he did it ended up making him look bad, petty, right? That is, I think, the same situation, you know, of how it looks for MSOs right now to go like, wait, we also want like the first wave of licenses along with social equity people. I was like, dude, you're a multi-million dollar company and you're going to fight over a license with someone who spent 15 years in prison for two joints. That is insane, right? Doesn't matter how right or not they are, especially those who are publicly traded, trade a lot on sentiment.
Well, I'm guessing there wasn't a lot of consultation with the amazing PR folks who represent these MSOs before they went and did this. But that said, you know, the program has kind of been designed to make it extremely difficult for big national players to really succeed easily in New York. And it's not, you know, the law was written that half the licenses, the goal, it's not a requirement, the goal is for half the licenses to go to social equity players and for the existing med operators to be only operators that can have a fully vertically integrated operation for both adult use and medical. So they're saying, well, in exchange for that, we're going to make you wait until we get some of the others up and running, and we're going to charge you this massive license fee, upwards of $20 million for each one. And that's, you know, they're not happy about that. And they're not happy about having to wait and be sidelined and have some good locations be taken from them for dispensaries, although they can co-locate within their existing medical stores as well. So it's going to be, I can understand why they're frustrated, but I think it is important, especially since these MSOs have really gone out of their way to set up internal, you know, social equity and diversity and inclusion initiatives and really support that. You know, we work with the brand Be Noble, which was, you know, set up by Fab Five Freddy, and he's got a great deal with Curaleaf, who really supports their brand and really is bringing it all across the world. So if at the same time you're doing things that the social equity community isn't happy about, you know, you have to decide what's important.
Amen. All right, real quick, I want to touch a little bit about what you're seeing kind of in the market at large, specifically in M&A. We've had conversations recently where there's companies that expect M&A to pick up in the latter half of the year. I'm curious to your insights. What do you think we should look for in the remainder of 2023 when it comes to mergers and acquisitions?
Continued volatility is probably the easiest way to describe what we will experience in the years ahead. We are all waiting, you know, at this point, the turn in the stocks is probably most likely to come when some regulatory event happens. That's pretty much what we're all waiting for at this point. The overall stock market helps, but that's really what we're waiting for. And I think if safe banking passes, that will be a major plus in terms of perception of where the industry is going. If Biden's rescheduling initiative actually results in rescheduling to Schedule 3 or better, I think that will be a major positive move.
Huge.
Get rid of 280E. We will have essentially federally legal medical marijuana through that. We'll be able to start importing and exporting. We're going to, I think that'll let NASDAQ start taking these companies on. I think safe banking will too. There's actually no reason that these exchanges have for excluding plant touching companies, but allowing ancillary. There's no legal reason at all that really makes any sense other than they just don't want to. And they need something that says, oh, well, because of this, we're changing our view. So I think that's what we're waiting for. And I think that's when M&A is going to pick up, stocks are going to pick up. And we're also at a point where so many of the stocks are significantly undervalued right now. And that at some point does, you know, hit a bottom because investors start saying, you know, this is trading at, you know, 0.5 revenue, 0.5 times revenue. Why don't I get in now? So, you know, I'm not a trader. I don't buy and sell a lot of these, but I think that's, and then same thing in psychedelics. The psychedelics is waiting for the first drug to be approved by the FDA. And that's their equivalent over there. We do a lot in that space as well, as you guys know.
You mentioned the stock market recovering and M&A recovering. Do you see some kind of correlation there in terms of returning to this kind of older situation where stock was one of the key currencies for M&A? Or are those days completely behind us? What do you think?
Some of that was cut off a little bit, but I think what you're saying is, what's the correlation between the stock market and M&A?
Is equity, our stocks coming back as an acquisition currency? Do you see that, or are those days behind us?
They're not behind us. They'll come back, I think, when the stocks recover a bit. I think acquirers do not want to use very low priced stock. The problem is they also don't want to use scarce cash when they're not sure where the next round of cash is coming from. And that's one of the reasons there isn't much M&A right now. And I think that we are seeing a little bit on the distress side now, and we're working on a couple of distress kind of deals. And I think some of the M&A that you're seeing now are maybe not distressed, but companies that maybe they talked to a year ago and now they're not doing as well. So they're trying to kind of take advantage and swoop in. Or I think there were one or two companies, MSOs, that were like, we had some bad news come out about us, so we're going to announce an M&A deal. And hopefully that's going to get everybody excited about us again. And so, listen, we try to do a lot when M&A is busy. Otherwise, we're doing strategic guidance and regulatory guidance and all of that. But that's what we enjoy doing, is helping companies grow and find their exit. And I think we shouldn't wait for legalization for many companies to look for that exit, because if you're going to wait for legalization, you're going to be in a long line of companies looking to sell all at the same time. And you're better off trying to sell a year before legalization. The problem is we don't know when that is. So we work with companies to figure out whether there's a benefit. But right now, where there's interesting opportunities in M&A right now are companies that could potentially be acquired by non-cannabis companies. So as you may know, we represented Green Market Report in their sale to Cranes, the first mainstream media company to come in and make an acquisition in the space. Yes. And they weren't focused on cannabis valuations. It was sort of a normal M&A conversation where we looked at the financials and kind of traditional multiples were applied. And I think we're seeing more interest from mainstream companies, at least looking to put their toe in or ask questions or learn more or find out more. And we're getting those inquiries starting now. And I think that's going to only increase as we get closer to something Biden may do, or safe banking or something like that.
I have two more questions before we wrap up here. The first one we could have a whole podcast on, so do what you can to keep it within a minute. But what is the trends that you're seeing right now for distressed M&A? Is that a huge topic we see that people want to talk about at our events? But in terms of the actual trends, what's actually happening out there in the markets when it comes to the amount of distressed M&A happening?
Well, you have to distinguish between a company that's distressed and a company that's like a disaster. And we've got a lot of companies that are disasters in this industry that are somehow still limping along and existing and surviving on fumes or whatever they're doing and looking for a buyer. And when you lift up the rock, you find gobs of, you know, disgusting stuff that that you can never fully easily clean up. Whereas some companies are okay, but they're overburdened or over-leveraged or whatever they did, their basic operations and their team are kind of strong. That's where there could be more of an opportunity. But honestly, we're not seeing a lot of these deals getting done. And part of it is we don't have enough people with strong expertise in doing these kinds of deals. You have to really understand how this works. Normally, distressed deals are done outside of cannabis with the threat of bankruptcy looming at all times. That doesn't apply here because cannabis companies, at least plant touching companies, can't go through federal bankruptcy. There are some state receiverships you can do, but in the end, it's up to the debt holders to decide what they want to do if they're secured debt, which sometimes they are and sometimes they're not. And even if they're secured, can they even come in and take over? And how does that work? And what about licenses and getting approval? And so it's not easy to do these deals where you may need state approval for what you're doing. That could take months or even God knows how long. I mean, it's hard enough in regular M&A deals to wait and wait and wait. And they usually do these management agreements in the interim. But can you really do that in a company where you haven't really dove in deep? So I think we're going to see it where there's just tremendous synergy between an acquirer and a distressed company that isn't a disaster. But you do need to bring in experts, and we do have team members who have that kind of experience on our team and who are looking. We're looking at two distressed deals right now that could be very interesting, one involving a pretty major brand in the space.
Very interesting. Honestly, thank you so much for that. That was
sorry, more than a minute, though.
No, worth it. With that being said, my friend, anything else that you want us to know about Skip Intro, about what you're doing, about what you're seeing in the markets right now?
We're seeing, you know, an extended, difficult period for the last year and a half. 2021 was awesome. 2020 was terrible. 2019 was awesome. You know, this is how it goes. But we've had a longer down period this time around. I do think, as I said, that something is probably going to happen probably before, at least before the election next year by Biden. I think he's determined to do something. He's not going to legalize. I don't think he will deschedule. But I could see moving to Schedule 3, which the industry used to oppose. But I think now we've started to realize. I've always been on my soapbox for the last year saying there's something that 40 countries have done that we haven't even done. And that's federally legalized medical marijuana. I don't know why people don't talk about doing that. I don't know why we don't pursue that. 92% of Americans favor legalizing medical marijuana. There's wide bipartisan support for it. It would be easier under our treaties because, by the way, legalizing recreational use would violate treaties that we and a couple hundred other countries are parties to, but not for medical. And then we could do import-export. These companies could go on NASDAQ, all of the benefits. And moving to Schedule 3 would effectively do that. And I think it could be very, very positive. And it would help with these issues that, like what you were talking about, where medical is disregarded in adult-use states because it's the same. In some states like Connecticut, the tax is, I think it's zero on medical. And so it's more cost-attractive, and a number of states have done that. And more should do that.
Amen. Dave Feldman, CEO, co-founder of Skip Intro Advisors. Thank you very much for your insights today. Honestly, super helpful, poignant topics, and looking forward to following up with you on those in the future.
Thank you for all the stuff that you guys do, and look forward to see you in Chicago next fall.
Thanks, Dave. Us as well.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Ah, love that guy. Honestly, some major insights on some topics that we talk about all the time, that it's nice to get another voice on who's actually participating in them and not just, no offense to you or to me, covering them.
I love that. There, no offense taken, man. These insights are super useful and super valuable. And as you say, it's you know, David is someone who is actually doing this, right? So he has the inside insights into what is really going on, and not just what people are saying, not the wishful thinking, not the, yeah, I would like it to be this way, nor that not the should be this way. It is this way.
Yes. Amen to that. With that being said, we are over time. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. As always, get your cannabis news on Benzinga.com/cannabis every day, all day, 30 plus articles a day from Javi and his team. Psychedelic space is covered as well. If you're looking to know what's happening with CGC, head on over to Benzinga.com/cannabis, and Javi's got the news for you there. A lot of proxy. I've seen the word proxy a lot over the past 24 hours, and I'm already tired of it. But that said, y'all, appreciate you all tuning in. Like and subscribe. Share this with your friends. If you want to hear from a specific industry leader, let us know who. We'll get them on the show. But until Thursday, we have a crowded room of guests on Thursday, so tune into that show. Gonna be fun, gonna be exciting. And we will see you all again next time. Javi, last words to you, my friend.
Join us in Chicago, September 27th and
28th. Chicago Conference
for those Latinos out there. BZcannabis.com or BZcannabis.com if you're in South Africa or Australia or whatever. We welcome people from all around the world. People fly for hours on end, miles and miles and miles to come join us at the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference. What is your excuse to miss it?
None. BZ. Javi, love you. AT, thank you. Everybody else, peace.